Good evening.
I would like to welcome all of you to the first forum that we're having for this week at Holden. My name is Arnie Ohox, and I'm here as the village philosopher this week, an additional resource person in the village. And I'm mainly helping Herman Deers, the program director, draw together some special interests that we will be looking at during this coming week. The first one for this week, and it's one I'm very excited about, is that we simply get to engage in conversation with those who are in the village with this week as a part of Hearing Impaired Week. This has become somewhat of a tradition at Holden, although it's my first experience of it. And I think it's a unique opportunity for us to share in this kind of a community life with people who bring some special insights and some special gifts to us. The way we're going to do the program this evening is slightly different from the strict forum kind of a format, where we often choose a topic that can be sometimes controversial for people, and we share feelings and ideas back and forth about that. What we're doing instead is we're going to ask the people who are in the village with the Hearing Impaired Week to share with us a little introduction of themselves and maybe just a little bit of their story, and then use that as a means to simply get into conversation with them. And I've been talking with John some, and his understanding and his intent for this time together is that we do just this, is that we make use of them as resource people who can, in a sense, welcome us into a world that has dimensions that some of us don't experience and don't have to deal with. It can be a real good sensitivity-raising, awareness-raising kind of an exchange, and I'm just looking forward to a fun evening. The two people who are here in a leadership capacity with this week, John Soyster, pastor with the group, also a parish pastor outside the village in the real world, and Joe Kling. Where's Joe? There's Joe. She's also working with the group. So I agreed that what I would do is introduce John and Joe, and then let them take the evening and invite us into conversation with them.
Thank you. We are doing this without any preparation. Very, very low key. So hopefully you can join in that spirit. I'd like each of our group that we've contacted just to share just a few words about themselves, whatever they feel like. We represent a variety of points of view, from the deaf world participants to parents to interpreters to religious leaders and support people. So we have a variety of ways of seeing the deaf world to share a little bit, not a lot, and then open it up for your questions. And I really mean it, that there are no dumb questions except the one you don't ask. And really ask about the most seemingly silly things that you have never understood about the deaf world, or the more difficult things that maybe are faced, whatever. You just feel free. If there is dead silence, I can always think of something as a preacher. I am currently leading a worshiping deaf community within a hearing church of about 1,000 members. The hearing church, I wish that the deaf congregation was 1,000. The worshiping group that we have at Salem in the Los Angeles area is about an average of 25. I've been doing work with deaf people for about 6 years. It's enough about me now.
Okay, your last name? Larry?
Gordon.
Thank you. I'm from Spokane, Washington. I'm deaf. I was born deaf. I was raised in Spokane, and I lived there all my life. I have an older sister who is one year older than me. She is hard of hearing. And that's when I got into the world of deafness. My parents wondered what happened. They found out that my mother had taken some medication to help to help control her nerves. That medicine is now off the shelf. I've shared with them many times how you feel about the deafness.
They were really disappointed.
They were really disappointed.
They were shocked.
They were shocked. They were depressed.
They
didn't know how
it
would be in the future. My mother is a full-time housewife. I appreciate the love that she had for me.
And my father was an educator.
My father was an education, a teacher, and a principal for 39 years.
And the beginning days, they planned that.
In the beginning, they planned that someday we'd be like hearing people. Sent me to a grade school. Went there for 3 years and then found out that I was not able to make the same progress as the other children. So they sent me to a moral school where I was there for almost 12 years. Which I now feel is too long. I had to study lip reading
English.
I had the same book for two years. And then I went into another book for 2 more years. I feel it was a waste of time. And then I went to junior high. When I started to mainstream with hearing people, I was not very comfortable.
And then I went to high school.
Then I went to high school, the same thing, I was mainstreamed. But I'll not explain all the problems that I've had. Then my ability, my skill was drawing, but it felt that deaf, as a deaf person, that was a good way for expressing myself, was in art. So
I decided
to go into architecture. Took me 6.5 years to get a 5-year degree.
It took me longer.
It took me longer
than the normal person.
I was 21 when I graduated from college. I was 28 years old.
The
most struggle I had in college was to understand that
a professor only
knows a person by the seat number. He never knew that I was deaf. I tried to explain to him that I was deaf and I needed special attention, but many times he would forget about that. There were many classes I couldn't because it was lectures, and that was no help. It was very frustrating. Chairperson told me I had a problem and asked if he could help me.
He stopped
and thought and said,
Why not use a tape recorder?
But one thing, the most important person in my life was a teacher in college,
in his college days,
he had He had a friend in school who was deaf himself. I appreciated that special help. That himself, what he knew about deaf architect now in Arizona. I graduated in architecture. Working myself like a deaf person.
Find a job in architecture.
Find a job in architecture.
I went off in the same field, in construction. I've been doing that very well for the last 14 years. I will stop for now.
So if you have any questions or any discussions.
Suggest that maybe the other people that are with us can introduce themselves and then we can have the questions. Would you like to jump in?
Well, my name is Mark Conlon. My wife, Alana. We have a daughter, Lindsay, who is hearing impaired. She's 7 years old. If you haven't seen her running around or heard her, you probably will. We discovered her problem when she was 6 months old, and we were able to get her wearing hearing aids at 9 months. She has about 85% hearing loss, so she has about 15% of what you and I have. Being parents, hearing parents, is it's a very difficult thing to have a child that is handicapped. And I fought it for a long time, I still do. But we've pushed quite a bit. I'm kind of a pushy person, and I found out after the first year, we found out what was available. We started taking her special education classes when she was 9 months old. I'd take her for an hour a week, and then I'd take her for an hour a week. And we started going. We learned after the first year that there was more to deaf education than sign language. There was two schools of deaf education. There was what was, we were told anyway, initially we were told there was two schools. There was an oral school where the children were taught to lip read and talk as well as they could. And then there was a manual school that the children were taught sign. The school district at the time, and I hope I don't offend anybody that's an educator, but the school district, working within limited budgets, had unlimited funds for sports and other programs, and very limited funds for special education. So they decided that they would have one education program. And that at the time was an oral program. The school teacher that Lindsay had initially was fortunate enough to get pregnant and leave, and so we got an interim teacher who opened her mouth and told us that there was more to deaf education than the two schools. There was a combined school, which is called Total Communication, which involved using manual communication and signing and oral communication, using whatever was available for the kids to utilize everything they could. And she subsequently got fired for opening her mouth about it because the guy that was head of the special education department didn't have anybody qualified to teach total communication. But we still pushed, we got the program in. So she's been involved in total communication now ever since she started going full days to school when she was 3 years old. And put a 3-year-old on a bus is a real thrill. We've never done it.
She was on the taxi for the first year and a half. By herself, strapped in the backseat.
Taxi drivers where we live stand about 6'2" and about this wide, and they're ugly. But she fell in love with them, and they fell in love with her, so it worked out real well. So she was going to school since she was 3 years old. She's now 7. We work with her as much as we can. The teachers at school are very, very helpful. They are still somewhat reluctant with the program because the underlying fact is still there that we are pushy and we want the best for our child. You have to remember that in the school district we are in, there are about, I suppose, 11,000-12,000 kids. It's the largest school district in Minnesota, and it's one of the largest in the country. So the hearing impaired program, she goes to a different school than my son, which has a total communication program. So she still gets picked up by the bus in the morning. She's regular school bus now, which is 4 or 5 kids on it, but then she is mainstream, and she's involved in the school program. She has interpreters with her all day long. She still gets a couple hours a day of special education. She goes to summer school as much as she can in the summer. We're pleased with the way things are going, but it's real difficult in the hearing world to understand what some of the problems are. One of the problems we just had last week, we took about a week to get her up through Canada on vacation and stuff, and we went to a water slide. Now that is very simple. They have all kinds of signs that say no running. Well, of course, kids that can read don't pay attention to it. Well, all the rest of the little kids are running around and everything else, and Lindsay takes off running. The lifeguard sits up there and screams at her, blows his whistle and all this stuff. And you can tell that people are visibly upset to see this one, all the rest of the little kids all slow down, and she just keeps off running. Well, they immediately think she's being a little smarty pants and doing all these things. So I have to go up there and I'll say, listen, I'm sorry that she's running. She's deaf, she can't hear you. So I will talk to her. I said, if you have any more problems, see me first and I'll get her. So it creates a problem because as parents, in a situation like that where she's not wearing her hearing aid, when she wears her hearing aid, she can hear some things. A lot of people think she ignores them because she doesn't hear immediately or she doesn't pick up. And so if she's not looking at you, she can't understand what you're saying. She reads lips, she signs, and with the combination of everything, she gets along very well. But when a stranger goes up to her, if they don't realize this, you'd be surprised the number of people that mumble and don't understand. And so it's a constant thing. We have to sit there. And I, at times, feel like I don't want to tell people this because they think I'm trying to flaunt her disability. And I'm not. It's just that I want people to understand that she's a person like anybody else. But she requires some extra help when you talk to her. This is fine. Hearing aids themselves are a very interesting machine. You have to understand that a hearing aid is one of the best things that ever happened for the deaf, because if you have any hearing at all, it'll amplify so that you can pick up. She wears the most powerful things that are made. And they're neat little items. Cost about $400 a piece. And so far we've gone through about 8 of them. She's 7 years old. Insurance doesn't cover it. Insurance companies are reluctant to do anything about it. You can buy a watch, electronic watch, that'll do everything for $10. There's a market for it. There's no market for hearing aids. So the hearing impaired people are stuck. I mean, really stuck. You go to a hearing aid dealer, you've got to pay exactly what he says. There's about a 400% markup. I mean, the hearing aid dealer buys these units for about $79. And he turns around and sells them to hard hearing people, hearing impaired people, anywhere between $400 and $600. So you've got a real disadvantage there. You're really in a tough spot. The hearing aids themselves, when any noise is made, everything is picked up and amplified to the same level. So if you can imagine, you're hearing my voice at one level, if somebody drops something in the background that you could barely hear at the end of the hall, the hearing aid would pick that up and throw that in at the same level. If you get four or five people in a group talking, some talking loud and some talking soft, the hearing aid amplifies everything. So that even with hearing aids, a hearing impaired person has to work extra hard to understand. You have to do selective listening, where we are born more or less with that ability. The hearing impaired person is not. So it gets to be very, very difficult. One of the things that I haven't really been able to freely admit for years, up until maybe a year or two ago, is that being a parent is very difficult because you blame yourself. Nobody knows why she was born this way. We done a lot of testing and a lot of other things, and no one can give us an answer. And I still don't know, and if somebody could tell me why this happened, I mean, even if it was a lie, if they could make me believe it, I'd feel great. But nobody can do that. So we try the best we can to make the best of it. And I'm very proud of my daughter, and I hope that the next, we'll be here for the rest of this week, and anybody that wants to talk to her, she'll talk to anybody. She's very friendly, and you'll see her. She'll sit right in the front and everything. And we don't, as parents, I don't especially, I'm very reluctant to learn sign language. I always have been, because I, even though I'm pushing for her to have every advantage, I'm reluctant to do something about it myself. And this week and other times when we're with people, when there's interpreters available, we are able to see how much it really helps her. She'll be able to get along in the hearing world, but she can get along a lot better if she has manual communication available to her. So I constantly change my outlook on her situation and how she goes. And it's a very growing process. But I remember one time when I was kind of down about it, my sister-in-law told me that God only gives problems to people that can handle them. And I feel good about that. Next.
Grace, you want to say it first?
Well, I'm Grace, and I have been associated with deaf people for 16 years. And I became a deaconess in the Lutheran Church and specifically served deaf churches for 8 years. And through the turn of events with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, I am now a deaconess in the LCA and a youth minister with them in hearing churches. However, I still volunteer a whole lot with Hope Lutheran Church of the Deaf in Portland. Because of my love for deaf people, I just couldn't not associate with them regularly. Therefore, I interpret during the school year and teach in the Total Communication Program in Portland with junior high kids. And it's really amazing to see children with all different skill abilities, not only intellectual, but also physical. Some who have a lot of hearing, and some who have none. Some who know sign language. Some who just recently moved into Total Communication Program after being in an oral program for 6-7 years. And if anyone's interested, I share many, many stories during coffee breaks about it.
Okay, my name is Jo, and I really didn't start my life with any association with the deaf. I went to school to become a phys ed teacher working with disabled children. And I worked in New York State for 2 years. teaching in that area. Then I moved out west and I couldn't find a job, and I finally found a job working in a classroom with mentally retarded deaf children, and they taught me sign language. They started with animals, lion. I walked down to the library with them and I'd open up the book, you know, me, the adult, and I'd say, "What's that picture?" And they'd say, "Lion." And I'd say, "Oh, lion." So I started learning from mentally retarded deaf children. But then my curiosity grew beyond their knowledge, and I started digging. And if anyone here wants to learn about sign language, I really would suggest that perseverance, to push, you know, that curiosity beyond just a few basic signs. Because if you have a willing heart and a determination to go for it, you will become really skilled and a real good friend with the deaf people you will meet. You will meet deaf people. Now I'm working in the church that I go to. I started with a children's deaf ministry. I feel that the children are lost. It seems like many, many churches have ministries for adults, but very few reach the deaf children. But then I found a problem. These children grew up and became teenagers, so now I have youth ministry. And we have a few adults also, so I teach a Bible study on Monday night with children, and then on Wednesday night with the youth that moved out of that class. And then on Sunday morning, we have a few more adults that come in. And then I interpret the worship service at our church integrated with the hearing population in our church. So we've got kind of a variety.
Barb, will you interpret for me?
Thank you. My grandfather's brother is deaf. And as I was growing up, we wrote notes with my great aunt and my great uncle, and none of the family learned sign language for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure. My aunt and uncle went through an oral school for like whatever it was, 10 or 12 years. And so all I remember as a young child is that I had an aunt and uncle who couldn't hear. They signed to each other. But everyone, when we communicated with them, we just wrote notes. And I never thought anything about it. I just figured that sign language was something you got if you were deaf. And if you were deaf, you didn't get it. And but, I grew up, and one day, you know, sometime in my life, something happened. I saw someone signing, and all of a sudden I realized that, oh, I could learn that. And I was about, it was about 5 years ago. 4 years ago. So I just got interested, and I went to the community college in Seattle, and I took a couple classes, and before long I was hooked, and I was taking the interpretive training classes. And I graduated last spring in interpretive training, and I've been interpreting at Seattle Community College since September. So I just finished my first year of working as an interpreter. And so I don't have as much experience as the other interpreters do, but that's my story.
Last, please.
I'm Barb Sukabati, and I'm from Nebraska, and I guess Joe and my stories kind of sound a little bit the same. I had never met a deaf person growing up. I went to college and I was studying in physical education, thinking I wanted to work with people with special needs. And a professor there on campus who was deaf came and spoke to one of my special needs classes about deaf people, and he was using an interpreter. And I was amazed at the knowledge this man had. But without an interpreter, that didn't flow back and forth between people, and I was really impressed with his interpreter. And so it came at a right time in my life. I always say this must have been God's blueprint for my life, because it wasn't my plan for my life. But I was at a point of frustration of wanting something, and this was kind of like, well, here it is, go for it. And so I took 2.5 years of interpreter training, and then I worked for this professor who was deaf for 4 years. And I would say that's like learning your foreign language and then going to the country and getting to use it with the people. That was my true training, working with him 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then I quit work to start a family and went freelance interpreting and have done that for the past 8 years. And find as years go by that we are more and more and more busy, which really pleases me because people are becoming more aware of the need of offerings to deaf people.
Right. Now it's your turn. Anything goes? Questions? Clarification? Observations? Experiences that you have in contact with the deaf world? Or the world of the hearing impaired?
It seems to me families who have a hearing impaired person must have some real problems. These have been alluded to already. What means are there to help these either siblings or parents or others work this out, deal with some of these problems?
What do you mean as far as means?
Well, I believe I can appreciate the problems that you encountered. We have an impaired child, but in another way. And you alluded to difficulties in accepting. I'd like to know how you communicate with your child now. But in addition to that, are there support groups, agencies, others, educational means to, or other kinds of agencies available to help?
There's a lot of agencies, a lot of ways to get help. It's there for the asking. And the problem I personally have with it is I still am reluctant to learn sign language. Lana knows a little bit. I know it very little. I can communicate with my daughter very well. I never have a problem with her. Almost never. What was that?
She screams.
As far as the school district won't tell you anything more than they want to tell you. We found that in the group we know about 7 families with hearing impaired children in our school district. And quite honestly, if it wasn't for me, they wouldn't know what was going on. Because the school district tells you one thing, exactly what they want you to know. And you've got to be able to take the time, you've got to take time off work, and you've got to go visit other schools of hearing impaired. You've got to see what the state has available, and you've got to find out for yourself. They do not tell you. I had a friend that was head of special education services for the state of Minnesota, and he gave me a few names, and I started going. I have access to a telephone all day long, so I just got on the telephone. And every time I come up against a brick wall, I'd drop his name. Amazing. It opened doors all over the place. People just don't like to talk about it. It's something that every time they tell you of something that's available, it's going to cost them money. And handicapped services are expensive, and since the law?
PLN
4142. Okay, there you go. The law says that the school districts have to make everything available for you. But if they don't tell you about it, that's fine. So I think you'll find it universal no matter where you go, that if there's one or two, and we found even with the smaller school district north of us, that if the parents don't become aware, the school district doesn't tell them. And so we've got support groups, Minnesota support groups, Minneapolis support groups, that we can talk to and discuss things with. And still, even within the groups, you find out that somebody all of a sudden finds, hey, this is available, let's do this. And it just all of a sudden works. You find some people, some audiologists, you like to go to find out what level of hearing your daughter has, if she's decreasing and what she can hear, this is what we found, or if there's any changes or this sort of thing. The audiologists are different. There's people in businesses for the handicapped that are strictly in business to make money, and there's people that are in business to help. You got to find the right way to go with it.
You have another child?
Pardon?
You have another child?
Well, I've got a job, yes.
No, child. I'm sorry.
Child, no. Oh. Yes.
Yes.
Is it my child? We have a 13-year-old son.
And has he had any problem accepting this impaired younger sister?
He does admit to it, but he does.
Has there been any way to help him work through that?
We try. Try the best we can. I try to spend time with him as much as I can.
I think our family is our biggest support group. We talk between each other, and he comes to me, I go to him, he goes to me. It's a continuous circle, and we work it out within the family.
Is Joe here that has the youth group?
Well, and I think Grace also has experience with that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to help family members of these?
Well, I try. Most of the kids in my group, the kids that I work with are Christians. They have a good relationship with the Lord. In fact, three of them just found that relationship this year. And the parents really don't have that yet. They don't go to church. And the kids are coming home with the materials and asking them questions about our Bible study lessons. And that's bringing together some continuity in the family. I think what we might throw out here to discuss is what is the church's involvement and what's happening here at Holden Village. I believe that you people might be learning or getting an education about the hearing impaired population. And if you just open up and use some empathy and then tell another person, that education will spread. It's like, you know, anything that people don't know about in the beginning, they feel threatened about it. And so they, you know, shy away from it. So people, you know, if they see someone without an arm, you know, when they go to shake their hand, they think, oh, they don't have an arm. You know, how am I going to shake their hand? So they avoid them. Often it will happen. Me, I'm comfortable with that. Just grab the arm and shake it. But I think the more we learn about something, you know, a little bit more comfortable we are. And then we can start that communication. I would like to compare it with a person who has lost someone in the family, maybe a sudden accident. People don't want to talk about death, people usually don't want to talk about someone that they found out has a physical disability. You don't know what to say. But we need to start saying something.
There are other parallels too, other taboo words such as cancer, and support groups have been helpful in family members dealing with these things.
If I could elaborate a little bit on what Mark was saying, I would agree that the last agency that I would recommend to a family would be the school district. If they contacted me, it means they're in touch with the church, which I'm happy about. And there are also, depending on your area, the larger metropolitan areas most of the time have the better services available from deaf advocacy organizations or other programs for mental health or services. So like in Los Angeles where I am, or especially in Minneapolis area, have some marvelous resources that I would send you to first for support in various ways. But I have worked as an advocate for families up against the school district, and I know that is the last place you're going to find any kind of support.
I think on that side, too, I'm a coordinator for special education for the school district. And it's interesting to hear discussions about different difficulties that people have, and I know that In our district, we've personally advocated for the child to the parent in two instances this year to get hearing aid help and different hearing services for children who their parents had not confirmed the need yet. We do have a very different population, and a lot of our population is second language, English not being the first language. So a lot of the advocacy for children, oftentimes it's the schools or it's noble. It's unfortunate that so many people here have had bad experiences, but I know that we provide a lot, you know, the only advocacy for kids.
If I could make a comment here. Our school district wasn't the first place that we got help. We were told to contact the school district first. We got help, but we got the very narrow-minded, one-track ideas. We were not given the entire picture. And that's the thing that I'm saying. I became very good friends with the special ed director. And I've also become very good enemies with him. And he and I, we can talk and converse, but he knows that if he tells me something, he better now tell me the entire thing and not just what he wants me to hear. Now, maybe in your school district it's different. Well, but in our school district, they gave us the direction to go to start.
I think it always depends on personality, people involved, and kind of the commitment of the district. But I wouldn't want people to feel a generalized feeling about school districts.
No, I'm not saying anything against the special ed directors or anything like that. What I'm saying is that they give the direction that they want people to go in. I don't feel, and to this day, he will not give the entire scope of what's available. He's a politician. He's an employee of the school district. He knows what he has to do to get the job done. He will not take and give all the information that's available because somebody like myself may want something different that he has to give. So he gives exactly what it is, and the six or seven other families that have hearing impaired children that go to school with my daughter, they were very content to go the way that he was directed. They were very happy with what he was giving them, and they thought that's great. But none of them asked the question, is anything else there? So all of a sudden, we got some doors open, and seven little kids all of a sudden got exposed to a different type that would not have been open if we hadn't been there. Maybe somebody else a year down the road might have done something, but it was a costly type situation. And the tough part is, when the school district sits down to do their budgeting, if they say they need extra money for special education, it's got to be, they will give it to you. They'll take the money out and they'll put it where it's supposed to be. But if they can bypass that, as in this day and age, the almighty dollar rules everything. So that's what we came up against. And we've heard too many other cases where people have come up against similar situations. We have families in the school district who are totally upset with the total communication program. We have one family that's taken both of their kids, two of their kids out of the total communication program because the parents are hearing impaired, and the parents do not want their kids exposed to total communication. So there's still problems involved with that. You have different parents groups wanting different types of education. And so you have to contend with that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and that's where the individualized educational plans, you know, come into focus, and where it's so important, like for yourself, that everyone try to be a true advocate, but not for their own needs, but what they see as best need of the child. And I think often people get tied up in the personalities of all the others involved and lose sight of what's best for the child.
Redirect a little different way. I think most of us are aware of some of the obvious barriers faced by some people with other limitations. For example, a person who is confined to a wheelchair, it's obvious that if there are steps before a door, they can't get in. And I think most of us have some of that awareness, and there's been some more awareness raised for us. I'm wondering, from the experience of the hearing impaired and the families and some of the people that worked with them, what are some of the physical barriers in terms of going out in society that the deaf or hearing impaired run into that we simply miss, that pass us by? Making your way through a city, what would be the hardest what's the nature of the barriers?
For myself, I would say that communication, watching TV, I can't understand what's being said. Radio, I can't get the news. Telephone, I can't talk with other people. Even though today we have made great improvements, that deaf people can get the information that they want. So for myself, I would say that I'm thankful that things are better for the deaf now.
Want to explain to people a little bit what you mean? Caption TV.
Sure, we have Caption TV. I think it's one of the most wonderful things that's ever happened because we can read the English at the bottom of the screen, and it's good for the deaf to learn the English. Also, with the telephone, we have the TTY. You hook it up with a coupler, and you can type like a typewriter back and forth.
Really neat.
It's really neat.
I think that things here at Holden Village might be a good example of that. We have a tape ministry here. It's of no benefit to the deaf. You can sit on the porches, but nothing. And also, you know, when the bell rings for the classes to begin, unless you have an interpreter standing on the roof of the hotel and going...
One thing that I did notice, though, on Saturday afternoon during our orientation, they do have a red light that blinks when the fire alarm goes off.
Yes.
And that's because those who have hearing can't hear it in there.
One thing that has surprised me is that with Larry, I'm often able to understand what he's saying. Now, how did Larry, how did you learn how to speak if you can't hear?
Well, I went through extensive therapy. It's really difficult process. You have to be very patient. It's very frustrating to do that. I learned through feeling, not through hearing. My chest has some movement that you would just feel.
There is a book with the title Deaf Like Me, which tells the story of a family with a deaf little girl whose experience was first with the oral world, and then later on at the end of the story they were sort of moved into the sign language world. And in that book, I believe it said that for their daughter to understand the concept of a word before it was able to speak it required 10,000 repetitions of that word. That was before she could speak it, but just understand what the meaning of the concept for her first words of vocabulary.
Great. One of the things that I would like to comment about is that there are churches strictly for hearing impaired people. Hope Lutheran Church for the Deaf in Portland is the one where I served for several years and still volunteer. And there the liturgy is arranged a bit differently than what you have been seeing. You've been seeing interpreted services. But Hope Lutheran Church of the Deaf, it is not interpreted services. They are services led by a pastor who is hearing, though he signs very fluently, beautiful signs. And then one of the lay people of the congregation will stand at the lectern and will sign, "Please copy," for all of the congregational response, for all of the singing, unless the choir sings. And they, of course, sign their hymns. And so there are different ways of ministry. It doesn't always have to be interpreted. There's a hymnal, there are several hymnals, but for that particular church they use the LBW, which is translated for the hearing impaired, so that the interpreter doesn't have to stand there and look at this English syntax and say, oh, I want to translate this into American Sign Language, which follows a different syntax. It is a different language. And so it's very smooth, it's very flowing, and it's very beautiful. Anytime you have the opportunity to visit a hearing impaired church or a church for hearing impaired people, stop in and find out what time their services are and go. That's another way that Joe was talking about attitude. You know, you might be curious, but to go and to participate, you know, to become part of their community is a major leap into attitudinal change.